This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. This is episode number 62 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
We are coming to you on Independence Day. Have you guys done anything fun for the holiday? Is this your thing?
I cubed today.
You cubed? Was it your cube?
Yeah, we had our first cube draft on Independence Day last year, so this is kind of like our cube-iversary, so we decided to have another cube draft today.
Wow, and how did it go?
It went pretty well. We had a couple people who have never cubed with us before come over, and they liked it. So, big success, I guess.
Well, that's fantastic. Have you made any changes since we last saw you at PAX a year ago?
Quite a few, actually. Most of the archetypes are pretty stable, but we add a couple new cards every time a new set comes out. So, like, from Shadows Over Innistrad, we added Tireless Tracker and Tamiyo's Journal and Duskwatch Recruiter. So I guess green got the biggest buff this time around, but it's still pretty much a good stuff cube, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, your cube is one of the few I enjoy drafting. Like, I'm not normally a drafter, and I'm certainly not a cube person, but I would draft yours any day of the week.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah. Katie, what did you do today?
I worked. I literally, like, just walked in the door from work not too long ago, so I've been working all weekend, so.
But didn't you make a friend while you were at work?
I may have kind of decided to bring a kitten home with me. Yeah, he was found in a field, and he's only 6 weeks old, and he has what's called a cerebellar hypoplasia, which is where the part of their brain that controls how they want to move is underdeveloped. So everything else with him cognitively is fine, but he kind of, like, bobs and wobbles around, and he'll be like that his whole life. So he has a bit of a disability, but he's very adorable, very fun, very cute, so... Aww. I'm bringing him home tomorrow night as soon as I get a litter box and things. I've never had a cat before, so we'll see.
Because you have every other animal under the sun, yeah?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. I remember you went through the inventory when we first started the show, and if I remember correctly, there was the dog, there's Watson, mm-hmm. and then there were lizards.
Yes, I have a lizard.
Okay, because that's how we got in the lumpy doodahs thing. You were explaining the whole, like, the doodahs are external and not internal.
Yep, and I have a fish, Muggsy. And then I did have a hedgehog for about 3 years. I don't know if I had him after the show, when the show was going on or not, though. He passed away.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one, because I remember we consoled you on the show. We opened the show by saying we were very sorry to hear about that.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So now we're adding a cat to the mix. We have to see how Watson does with cats. He does well with our big cat, but he's not very, like, gentle or aware of himself. So I just want to see if he's going to be, you know, friendly and nice enough to the kitten so that it doesn't get hurt.
You're this close to building an ark.
Oh, yeah. I will sail that ark to the new world.
Katie's ark, that needs to be a hashtag right there. Anytime you guys see, like, you know, people like to trade cute animal pictures on social media, like dogs and cats, just hashtag that Katie's ark. It'll go on the ark with her.
Yep.
Chris, what did you do today?
I slept in until about, like, 1 o'clock, and then I got up and watched the Cubs game. And that was wonderful because they beat the Reds. And then I had ice cream and Panera with my friends. And it was really nice. So just kind of a relaxing day. I imagine this is what it's like to feel retired or be retired. So I look forward to that day if and when it comes.
I worked out and had a salad.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, so I've been trying to eat better and I've been trying to work out a little bit, and I've designated one day a week as my splurge day where I eat good every day, but on the splurge day, I just go ham. I just go hot ass mess. And so Saturday was supposed to be the splurge day because that was when Chris and I hung out, which we'll talk a little bit about later. And we went to Olive Garden and had a gay old time. And then all of a sudden it turned into splurge weekend. So then Sunday rolled around and I was like, I'll just eat crap today too. And so before I knew it, this morning, I just woke up feeling disgusting and I was like, oh, I feel dirty. And so I went to the gym and kind of cleansed myself. And then I just found myself craving vegetables. And so I had a big fuck off salad and a Diet Coke. And I just feel a lot better. And it's just a new thing I'm doing. It seems to be working quite well. But I just had to repent for this weekend because I was bad.
Cool.
That's really bad, yeah. So let's go ahead and get started. So the first thing we're going to talk about this week is CSL wrapped up last week, our final episode of CSL. The big plot twist was that the wins didn't necessarily matter. You know, we had the quarterfinals, we had the finals, and everybody thought that that was going to be the deciding factor. And come to find out that there was actually a tribal council done Survivor style, where each person from the league, you know, who didn't make it to the finals got to go on camera and place their vote for who they wanted to win. And ultimately, Kenji ended up winning. Congratulations. You know, looking back on the last 10 weeks, you know, what was it like for you guys and what did you kind of take away from the experience? Hallie, why don't you go first?
It was a really cool experience for sure. I like that we had to go outside of our comfort zone. I know that's something that Katie has brought up a lot about how, you know, a lot of these formats were really foreign to us. And I was definitely in the same boat. Like, I had never played Canadian Highlander before. I had only played Pauper a handful of times, and it was really cool to just try these new formats, and also just to try these new formats with people whose content we really enjoy and people that we look up to in the community. So this was definitely a positive experience for me, and, you know, I look forward to anything that comes of it in the future.
I really liked kind of the exposure to coverage. We've kind of talked about, you know, how maybe I might be interested in it, and Hallie's doing, you know, text coverage now and might have the opportunity to do video coverage in the future. But I hear a lot of times at different events or whatever, people being like, oh, I could do that. You know, coverage isn't that hard. And when you actually get up to do it and you have to be entertaining and fill all the downtime, it was just a really good experience to kind of get all of that behind the scenes. And I think that we were pretty well received by everyone. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I love the different formats. Chris and I had a lot of fun that one week playing Popper. We were just both yelling into the microphone at each other. So it was in excitement, not in anger. The whole thing was a lot of fun and just really good exposure to how things are run and what kind of hard work it takes to put on a production like CSL.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. It really does take a lot of different people and a lot of time and energy to put something like that together. So I still give mad props to Randy and Athena for, you know, all their hard work on the show, especially Athena, because she's like, go, don't do this, do this, da, 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 da. Like, I don't know if I could have done her job. And so I thought that was amazing. I had a good time playing the different formats. I liked being able to talk to people that maybe I don't normally talk to, even if we were just, you know, talking in chat to like Wedge or Marshall or somebody. And I thought that was really nice. Kind of like the background talk I thought was really cool in Skype chat, and being able to just to work with other content creators was a real treat. And so I hope that, you know, that could be a gateway to do other things with them in the future. That would be really awesome. And I said it on Twitter, but it kind of felt like the last day of summer camp where you're going to go home and you say goodbye to all like the friends that you met. Mm-hmm. And it was really kind of like that. I was like, well, now my Thursdays are going to go back to being whatever I want them to be. And it's just going to be different to not have to, you know, have a deck to come up with, or, you know, think about, you know, do I have to do commentary this week? Do I need like 3 Xanax? Like, I don't know. So there's just a lot, you know, to miss now. And I really did enjoy doing CSL. I was actually going to try to maybe go through something on my own where I would recreate all the decks that we could potentially build and like do them in my own way and see how I would build them. So I was going to do that like as a personal challenge for myself. And yeah, I'm just sad that it had to end, but I really hope that the community enjoyed what we did and that, you know, they do receive another season like a lot of people seem to want.
Yeah, it sounded like Randy said that it was really well received and that Wizards is interested in a second season, but they don't have the budget for it right now. And so if they do another season, it probably wouldn't start until January of next year. But it does sound like one is in the works, and hopefully they'll have, you know, another amazing group of people to fill it. I'm sure they won't have a hard time doing that. I was, you know, very excited to be part of this, and I was very proud of everybody. And for me, I was just focused on us as a group. You know, I was really hoping for the exposure. Like, I really wanted everybody to see what we could do. You know, we were kind of the newer people on the block on that show. Like, a lot of people didn't know who we were. And so getting all of the YouTube views and seeing how many people were sitting in Twitch at any given time, you know, 3,500 people, 3,000 people, you know, I just wanted everybody to get their moment. You know, I was pushing for everybody to have a chance at doing coverage, you know, having everybody, you know, see your faces, see your names, see how funny you were, see how smart you were. And I'm really glad that we got that exposure. And that's really what I came for. You know, the feedback that we got from people at events was insane. I remember we had one guy, we went to SCG Indianapolis, Chris and I, and this guy came up to me, no hellos, no how are use, and his opening line, he goes to me, he just gets right in my face and he goes, "World Gorger Dragon is bullshit." And I'm just like, and it took me a second to process it, and I was like, oh yeah. And then he's like, oh hi, though, by the way, I'm so and so. And I'm like, oh hi. And he's like, you guys were robbed, just throwing it out there. And you know, just seeing people get invested in us and rooting for us, you know, we had some people send us tweets saying, you know you guys have just been, you know, getting the bad luck and you're getting the bad matchups and you're having these cards and we're really pulling for you. And you know, it was kind of nice being the underdog because people just really didn't know what we were capable of, and they were like, there's something here and we really want to see you guys just bust out. And so, you know, having people be invested in you and rooting for you is a really great feeling. And you know, hopefully we did people proud, like hopefully they were proud of us, and hopefully we were able to introduce people to who we are and what we're all about. And you know, just hopefully we'll be able to see kind of the payoff of doing this, you know, more exposure, a little bit bigger, new fans, and you know, that to me is really what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But I agree with Chris. It was very sad. Like, even when it was happening, you know, we have this Skype call. We have this Skype chat that has all of us in it. And, you know, seeing people kind of just say their goodbyes to each other and say the good nights, knowing that we won't really have that anymore. We won't be in that chat channel. We won't be saying our good nights. We won't have Athena, you know, giggling in our ear and telling us what to do. And, you know, we got very used to that. And so I was very sad to see that end.
I logged on to Skype because I was out of town during the last episode, and it said like 100 new messages or something. And I was like, what? And then I like clicked on the CSL chat and I was like, oh no, they all said goodbye and I didn't say goodbye. Yeah. And I had a little moment where I was reading through them all and I was like, oh, this is, I'm going to miss this.
I also felt like it was a really good team building exercise for us. You know, we had some very unique obstacles as a group in that a lot of the chemistry that we have on the show, we've built over the internet. Like, you know, I haven't seen Hallie. I think the last time I saw you was Oakland. I see you like once a year, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Katie, I have only met twice, you know, mm-hmm. And then Chris, I see regularly. And, you know, you have Magic the Amateuring, who sees each other several times a week. You have the Loading Ready Run people, which have been working together for years, you know, and we just haven't really had that many opportunities to work together. And so I feel like we came together as a cast on the show. I feel like we got a little closer. I certainly feel like our shows since we've come back from vacation have been stronger. And I think CSL played a part in that. And so for me, I was also really happy with us as a group and that I feel like we came out of it a little stronger and maybe even a little closer, which was not something I expected.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Chris, you and I got the chance to hang out the other day and we played some EDH.
We did.
Oh. Is this a sore subject for you?
No. I'm just sad I didn't have a lot of counter spells.
She's playing the Is It Commander, red blue, the pre-constructed, and all these terrible things are happening around us. And we're looking at Chris going, Chris, a counter spell would be great right now. Counter spell would be great right now. And she'd be like, brainstorm? And I was like, how are you playing a blue EDH deck with no counter spells?
They were somewhere. Just not in my hand. And I wasn't drawing them. But yeah, Aaron came down. We went over to Coliseum Games, which is where I play FNM at. And we had just missed the commander group that meets every Saturday. They had all just left. And the owner of the store, my friend Gerald, he was like, well, if you guys want to play, he's like, we can grab someone else and we'll play. So we grabbed my friend Jordan and the four of us sat down. I'm doing the red and blue pre-constructed deck that has, oh God, what's his name? Exivic, whatever his name is, the goblin. is it mage thing that makes all your like instants and sorcery spells cost like one less or whatever the hell. But fun deck. I would maybe want to mod it. I know that Erin was able to do that with her pre-constructed deck, so I might want to do the same. My friend Jordan was playing a... It was like all the artifacts and Mindslaver, and just gets the opportunity to cast Mindslaver multiple times, and had Calissa as his commander. So if there's more to it than that, I'm not sure, because those were the two main things he was doing, was like Calissa, Mindslaver you. So he kept on doing it to Gerald instead of Aaron and I. But it was interesting. There was a part of me that was like, oh, I like that you're playing Mindslaver. But then there's the other part of me that's like, I don't really like that you're playing Mindslaver. I don't want you to Mindslave us. But it was an interesting deck. And then Gerald, his commander, I forget what her name is because I'm not very well versed in
EDH. Bella the Nightclad.
That's it. Mm. And he runs blue, but like no counter spells in it, he said. So, but he also had, what do you call it, Maze of Ith in there. So, you know, creatures go to attack. It's like, no. So kept on just tapping and be like, no, no, no. And then Erin had her Daxos deck, so that was pretty cool. And we had a good time. Erin ended up crushing all of us. And that was about where I thought it was going to go, but I wasn't completely sure. But it was probably the fastest game of EDH that I've had a chance to play, which was really cool. I would probably definitely play more Commander if I was able to get together my own deck. And not that the pre-cons are bad by any means. Like, I think I own all of them for the past, like, 3 years or something. But I would rather be like, eh, I don't like this spell so much. I'd rather have a different spell. And I think it's one of those things where, for a lot of people, their EDH deck is like a labor of love. Like, it takes time to perfect it, get it the way you want. I mean, hell, I'm sitting next to Jordan. I'm like, shit, is that a foil Liliana? Like, what is this? Like, everything was like foiled out in there. And I'm like, maybe someday. But I can definitely see the appeal to why people would prefer to play more casually with like EDH and like even, you know, with Pauper and stuff like that. And I think I'm not that I don't want to still be competitive, but I can definitely see the appeal to it. I'm starting to lean more towards a more casual side of Magic, I think. And yeah, I had a lot of fun. So I would definitely like to do an EDH night with some friends coming up soon.
Shout out to MTG Goldfish. That's the website that had all the... They have a really great budget commander column, and then they also had the writer who analyzed all of the pre-constructed decks and then came up with really cheap upgrades. I think I paid $30 for mine, where it was like, you know, take out these 12 cards that are not so great and replace them with these 12. And one of the cards that he suggested is the one that helped me win the game. I was running Skybind, which is that one where anytime an enchantment enters the battlefield, you can blink a non-enchantment permanent. So I would have Daxos and just start making spirits, and then all the spirits are enchantments. So it's like, okay, blink the Maze of Ith, blink that blocker, swing for something. And I was just swinging in with spirits, basically. And that enchantment won me the game. Oh, cool. So I had a lot of fun with that. And then my local game store also has an EDH day on Sunday, which I didn't even know about. Like, I've been going to the store for years and didn't even know that that happened. So I signed up for that. It was $5, no big deal. And I had a really good time with that one, too, except there was one guy in my pod who kept driving me crazy. He was playing Yisan, the wandering bar. Let me tell you, I have never wanted one person to fall down the stairs more than him. Like, he just had an answer for everything. Like, you know, something would happen and he's like, oh, tap Yisan. And then, like, he had so many effects that would untap it, and then he would do it on other turns. And just everything. You played an enchantment, he had a green creature that destroyed it. You were going to swing at him with Skitherix, bam, Hornet Queen. You know, just, he just refused to die. And it was just like, sir, just good day, sir. And then, like, you know, you would think that, like, the deck was built in a certain way with all the various casting costs, because you have to go looking for all those creatures. I was like, well, he's probably all out of four drops. He doesn't have anything else. Nope, he does. And it's just like, God, did you, oh, you know, and so he ultimately ended up dying to Skittles, which was great. And then I got there and that felt good. And I've just been having a lot of fun playing EDH. I built an EDH deck online. I even found a list I liked that involved Hallie's Boo, Brago.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sent you the list. It costs, like, $40 to build. It's, like, Brago EDH. It has to do with, like, artifacts and stuff. And I was like, I would totally build this. And I was like, Hallie, I'm borrowing your guy for a little bit.
So. You can borrow him. You can borrow him. That's cool.
I'll return him in the condition I found him, I promise. But yeah, I just started going through all these posts and I found a Silvala deck that I like from Conspiracy. And you know, Hallie brought up a really good point on Twitter. You know, when I first started getting into EDH this week, I was kind of looking at it like competitive Magic. Like I was asking for deck lists. And you and Chris brought up the fact that these decks are kind of like labors of love, that people mm-hmm. don't really net deck them, that there are people who, you know, find a commander that they like and you can find like 30 different spins on them. And I just assumed it would be like competitive Magic where you would go on something like MTG Goldfish, see the tiers, you know, or see the top decks and then just pick one and have a good time. And it's so not like that. Like it really is all about personalization. And that's something I'll have to get used to is I've never really done that with a deck before. I'm pretty much a net decker.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, personalization and creativity are really like the backbones of the format, but it's also like, there are as many different ways to play Commander as there are Commander players. Like, yeah. There are some people who do take it really seriously and who do build these crazy combo decks that can go off on, like, turn two or three. But if those people go and play with some other Commander players, then they, like, won't be welcome in that play group because those other players will choose to play in a different way. So it's all about not just finding a deck that works for you or finding a style of play that works for you, but also kind of like finding a community where you fit in. And it's definitely an interesting way to play Magic. It's not something that I've devoted a lot of time with, but, you know, it's definitely a lot of how a lot of players prefer to play the game. And I have a lot of respect for Commander players.
Yeah, it's funny because that was the reason I avoided Commander for so long is I'd had a really negative experience with a girl that I still don't talk to because I'm still bitter about what happened 3 years ago when she got an infinite combo off on turn four. And I was like, I was under the impression that, you know, we were having fun, goofy EDH where you're just casting ridiculous eight drops and having a good time. And, you know, I happened to stumble into a game where that wasn't the case at all. And so, you know, when I find a game that's kind of goofy and light, I love EDH. But if I find that everybody's really spiky and playing foil Gaia's Cradles and things like that, that I start to kind of tune out a little bit. Like, that's just not my idea of a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun format. Like, I play it every now and then. Like, I don't build a lot of my own Commander decks because I devote a lot of my time to, you know, Standard and Modern and formats that, you know, I play more often. But, you know, when I do play, I guess I skew more to the, like, playing cool 8-drop side, I guess. Like, I don't know. I feel like if it's supposed to be like a group activity, I kind of want to see everyone's deck do its thing.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see everyone, you know, get to do something cool with their deck and then hopefully still find a way to win the game.
Yeah.
We actually have a Commander State Championship in Montana every year.
Really?
Yeah, there's a store who runs it and they only do like one or two PPTQs a year. But they run it every year, and it's like, it actually has a very big draw, almost as, you know, it's like 30 to 40 people, I think, show up, and they do two rounds of, like, pods of four, and then a round of, like, 1v1. I think the format kind of changes every year, and they don't sanction it, but, everybody just plays kind of for the title, but I've heard that everybody has a good time. I've never actually been myself, but Brooke always judges it, and he gets, you know, the wacky calls that you always hear about in Commander games. And he did, like, they wanted to do it competitively, like it was competitive the first year they did it, and so they did deck lists.
Wow. Oh no.
And Brooke did, like, a deck check, like, literally one deck, and then he was like, okay, we're not going to do this anymore.
Oh, God. That sounds painful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it draws people out who, you know, don't either want to play PPTQs or aren't really into Modern or Standard, and just kind of gets a different crowd out there to, like, a bigger tournament. So it's definitely been good for Montana, I think.
Yeah. While we were at F&M on Friday night, there were some people that were busy buying out cards. Lion's Eye Diamond soared all the way up to $250 a piece. I purchased mine when they were $85 a piece, and I was bitter about that when it happened. Now my Lion's Eye Diamonds, the playset that I have, are worth $1,000. Dredge is officially no longer a budget list. it's budget for Legacy, but buying a Dredge deck now is $1,000 right off the bat. Plus that, plus everything else you have to buy. Legacy Storm, good luck getting Lion's Eye Diamonds for that too. And we've seen a couple of buyouts recently. Somebody recently purchased all of the moats that were out there. And Lion's Eye Diamond was another one. And this has been a problem for a little while, but this is something that people are, again, kind of talking about and what this means for Legacy and whether or not this is right, and whether or not, you know, the reserve list is the problem. You know, do you guys have any thoughts on this? Like, what do you think when you hear about this and these cards being, you know, bought en masse and then resold for hire? Like, what do you think?
I'm honestly really sad about it. I'm sad because, obviously, you know, the cards are out on the market. I'm sure stores can't restrict, you know, who's going to buy all the cards. So there isn't really much that can be done to just stop one person from going in and essentially taking over the market. So it's a really awful situation, I think. I mean, I'm glad that there are more opportunities for people to play Legacy on Magic Online, but for people who prefer to play Legacy in person or like the experience of going to their local game store and playing Legacy, I think this is really unfortunate for those people. And I include myself in that group because I, you know, if we didn't record the show on Monday nights, I would be going to my local game store and playing Legacy because that's our Legacy night. And honestly, I'm sad about it. I kind of wanted to build Legacy Storm and now I guess I can't. I can only build it online.
Yeah, when I read this, you know, we had an article about this that somebody wrote, and it kind of, I mean, you know, everybody's allowed to do what they want, but I feel like it's just disrespectful to go about it this way, and I don't know, maybe the stores could do something like a certain ISP can only purchase 4 of a card at a time, or something like that. I don't feel like that would go very well, but I'm in the same boat as Hallie. Like, this just really sucks, and it sucks that maybe somebody was, like, waiting to buy Lion's Eyes until their next paycheck or whatever it may be, and they have the rest of the deck, and now it's just completely unaffordable. It's just, it's really disappointing.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, as a person that's been wanting to get into Legacy for maybe like a year and a half now, it just gets more discouraging every time I hear situations like this, because it's like, well, maybe I'll build this deck instead, or maybe I'll build this one, and then it always seems like there's still something in the way, because something is still so ridiculously expensive. And I just feel like, if you are a part of the community, why would you want to do something that hurts other people in the community? Like, I guess I just don't get that. I mean, whether or not people will bend and buy at that price, I guess, will remain to be seen. But I just think it just creates kind of a bad situation for the people that, you know, want to play the game, especially people that want to play paper Magic. Like, for me, I would prefer to play, you know, in person rather than online, because it is such a social activity and that's what I like to do. I mean, if we could get a Legacy event going around here like a consistent basis, like, I would probably want to play. But again, the price is what restricts a lot of things. Now, to be fair, if I wanted to really set aside some extra monies that I spend on other things to do Legacy, I'm sure that I could. However, yeah. but when you figure, I mean, the price now for these Lion's Eyes, the price for Tabernacle, Jesus Christ, like $1,000, if not more, just for one Tabernacle, that's insane. And whether or not the actual reserve list is the problem, like, I think that is better left up to people that are more involved in MTG Finance or, you know, the whole reserve list debacle more than myself. But I like that the article that we ended up reading talked about how Wizards perhaps maybe went about doing Eternal Masters in a way to see if it was possible to reprint some of these cards just a little bit at a time to see how it goes. And I think that that would be something that I would definitely be behind so that people could get access to cards that they do want. Maybe I'll get into Legacy. I don't know. I guess it depends on how long some of these shenanigans go on for, because it just kind of makes me sad when I figure, well, who am I going to play with? No one.
Yeah, the article that we're referencing is from a young man named Jacob Herlin. He has a blog at mindlessautomaton.squarespace.com. Article came out today, July 3rd. It was really well written, and he basically says that reserved list buyouts are the symptom, not the disease. And he says that the people, you know, responsible for these buyouts are just sort of doing what they need to do to make a profit, and that, you know, this is sort of the price for Legacy, that this is, if people want to play, this is what you have to do, you know, kind of saying that nothing is promised and this is just what it is. And his ultimate point is that the reserve list has to go. And that's a really hotly debated topic. And, you know, my stance on this is that, you know, we try to acknowledge that every subsection of the community, you know, deserves to be listened to and deserves to be considered. You know, we have casual players, competitive players, EDH players, modern players, and we try really hard not to discredit them or to exclude them. I'm not really sure. It feels like we're doing a lot of things for the sake of collectors. And when I look at the game of Magic, to me, Magic is meant to be played. And I've never understood the concept of sitting on cards thinking that you're going to retire with them someday. You know, you're sitting on all of these cards, and meanwhile, people who want to use them can't, you know, which means attendance at some of these tournaments might go down, which means the tournaments might not fire, all because you're convinced that you're going to retire somewhere off a playset of Taiga. It's ridiculous, you know? And like I said, I try really hard not to, you know, exclude a group from things, but I feel like if this is something you have to do, whatever it is, and you're going to isolate, you know, you're going to exclude collectors and possibly make everybody else's lives better, I think the ends kind of justify the means on that. And so I'm completely fine, you know, hurting some collectors' feelings because their prices might drop or what have you, if it means that more people get to play with it and there's more attendance at events, there are more events, and everybody kind of wins. You know, I don't feel that we should be doing this dance just to keep collectors happy. It just feels like we're doing way too much to make that happen, and too many people are suffering for it.
Right, and I don't think it's unreasonable to say that, you know, this couldn't be a good thing for collectors, because just in my limited experience of talking to people who collect Magic cards, like, you know, old rare cards and misprints and things like that, a lot of those people happen to be really big Legacy and Vintage fans. And they want more people to play with. Like, they want more people to have access to, you know, the decks to play Legacy and Vintage with them. And so I don't think it's necessarily that, I don't think that those groups are necessarily mutually exclusive. I think some collectors wouldn't mind if those cards were reprinted somehow.
So there was another kerfuffle that happened recently involving Pro Tour Eldritch Moon. I got a summary of it from Reddit. So this is basically what the gist is. So the players that were qualified for Pro Tour Eldritch Moon got an email that says that they have to get a subclass 400 visa. So the tourist visa that these guys normally use to go to the Pro Tours was not going to be enough, and they had to apply for this special visa. But the problem is that they didn't know about this far enough in advance. And the visa process can take up to 4 weeks. So that was the big bummer right there. Some of these guys, you know, they go 2 weeks before the Pro Tour, they do a little bit of testing, some sightseeing, and that's that. They also found out that the visa that they need is only valid for up to 7 days before the event happens. So for those people, I'm not done. So for the teams who like to go a week or two in advance, get a house and do the whole real world thing, you can't do that because your visa won't last that long. So the travel plans aren't going to correspond with the regulations of the visa. So then they email the TO of the GP to sort of sort this out, and then the TO says they're going to get back to them in a couple of days. The visa itself costs $200, at least $200, which the pros have to pay for. No one's paying for this for them. And also, the documentation process for the visa is 73 questions. Yeah, there were screenshots of this going around. It was nuts. And so this has caused several pros to be like, you know what, girl? I'm just not doing this. Like, I'm not paying the $200. I'm not filling out your 73 questions. This isn't going to happen. I was keeping up with Helene's Facebook, and she was incredibly stressed throughout all of this. Wizards was really trying to help these people out. And ultimately, it turned out that Wizards is going to support them as much as possible. People who can't make it because of the visa shenanigans are still going to get 3 pro points, platinum benefits, and or their invites deferred. So if you decide that this is too much for you, you can choose to skip this one and have your invite sent to another pro tour. And, you know, did you guys keep up with this? Like, what do you think when you hear all of this, this insanity?
It is, insanity is a good word for it. I was watching the bit on Magic TV where Paul and Mashi were discussing this, and when I heard Paul say that he generally pays like $20 for a tourist visa and now has to pay $200 for this special visa, like, it was just mind-blowing. Like, has this ever happened before, or is this just like an Australia exclusive thing?
This is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, I don't, so do only the pros need these visas, or do all of the competitors need them?
Or the judge staff? What about the judge staff?
As far as I can tell, it's only the people competing in the pro tour.
Got it.
Okay. So, I mean, I kind of feel bad for all the people who, like, finally top four their RPTQ and, like, don't get anything. I don't know. I mean, I can see, you know, Wizards takes care of the pros, and that's awesome. But I hope that, you know, all of us little guys kind of, you know, get something. I don't know, because it seems kind of crappy to have to go through all of this, and maybe you don't even get your visa on time, and maybe you can't even go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems really unfortunate to have to jump through all these hoops to go play a game. Like, it's just odd. Like, it's just kind of mind-blowing. I guess maybe there's a reason Australia has these odd restrictions. I don't know if something crazy went down or whatever, but I appreciate that, you know, Wizards is going to try to help them, you know, as much as they can. And also, you know, mad props to Helene for, you know, dealing with all this stuff like a rock star, because she does really, I think, fight and do a lot of good things for the pro players. So I'm hoping that some people are able to go and enjoy themselves, and it'll be interesting to see what attendance for this pro tour ends up being.
Yeah, I'm reading the Reddit thread now, and those are words you'll normally never hear me say, but but, you know, from what I can see here, you know, PV was talking about the fact that there's prize money at stake. You know, the airfare is the prize money. There are boxes that you have to check on this questionnaire asking you, are you getting paid? You know, it has to do with the fact that it's a competitive event that you can win money on. That's what really changed the game for everybody. And apparently there was even talk of, like, PV got an email saying the Pro Tour has been flagged by Australian authorities. So it sounds like, you know, I believe Germany has some strange gambling laws as well, where, like, you can't even play in their GPs unless you're at least 18 because of the way that the prizes work. And so I think this is just unique to the country and how their laws are with regards to competition and prizes. And it's just, you know, it's just wild that there's just such short notice with this. And also that, you know, you talk about, you know, you win your RPTQ and you get your airfare, you get whatever comes with it. But, you know, flying to these things, if you don't have any appearance fees or anything to help you, these aren't cheap, you know, and, like, you're responsible for your hotel fare, your hotel fees. Now you're paying for this plus your everything else. It's like, you know, these guys are already not making the greatest money, and then on top of this, it's a lot. It really is.
I had seen on Twitter, I think it was PV, just talking, like, I'm having a lot of problems with this Australian visa, and I was like, oh, okay. And then it like took me a while to connect that Australia meant the PT. And then I started seeing everybody just like, this thing is the worst. So, you know, mad props to Helene for trying to take care of everyone.
I had to laugh at, I think it was either PV or Willie Edel, but one of them made a comment and they were sort of like laughing at the Americans because they were like, you know, whatever problems you're going through right now, we go through that every day. Like, so it was nice to see them get a little bit of amusement out of everything as they were like, welcome to our world, Americans. the one thing I kept thinking of throughout this whole thing was I felt really bad for Australia and all of this because I know that they have a very difficult time getting products sometimes and, you know, they don't get nearly enough exposure. They don't get very many events and Australia is quite large and, you know, the opportunity to have a pro tour in your country is a really big deal and can really give your community some validity. And I would hate to think that this would cause Wizards to never go back there, like to never have another pro tour there. And, you know, I would hate for that to happen and demoralize their community. And, you know, I would hate for Australian Magic to be affected by this in some way. And that was mm-hmm. the only thing I kept thinking of is, you know, I have friends down there that are constantly just looking for more exposure and more recognition. And this could really hurt that. So Eldritch Moon is about a third of the way spoiled. We've got about 71 cards we've seen out of 205, and I thought it might be fun to sort of just talk about the specific ones that we're really excited about and why, because this set looks crazy good, and we all have such different tastes, and I thought it might be fun to, you know, kind of bring up these things. And so, Hallie, why don't you kick us off? What are you looking forward to of what we've seen so far, and why?
I guess in general, I'm looking forward to a lot of the black cards, which is not normally something that you would hear me say. I actually like Liliana the Last Hope more than most players. I know a lot of people were saying she seemed kind of underwhelming, but she reminds me a little bit of like the second side of Jace Vryn's Prodigy, like in a lot of ways. You know, being able to shrink down a creature for a turn, being able to get card advantage, being able to fill your graveyard and, you know, use that to your advantage. So I think she seems pretty cool. I guess the card that I am most excited about is Voldaren Pariah, aka Marceline the Vampire Queen, as I have been referring to her. She kind of reminds me of Marceline. She's a 3/3 for 5 with flying. But her madness cost is triple black. You can sacrifice 3 other creatures to transform her, and she becomes Abolisher of Bloodlines, which is a 6/5 flyer. And when when this creature transforms into Abolisher of Bloodlines, target opponent sacrifices 3 creatures. So she changes from Marceline into this crazy Eldrazi. Looks almost like she has a goat head. I can't really tell. This card is really cool. It's definitely going to be a limited all-star. Like, being able to flip her over and get your opponent to sacrifice 3 creatures is really awesome. And still, you know, when you're still left with a 6/5 flyer, you can possibly put her in some kind of a sacrifice deck. Like, I could see putting her in a deck with, like, Pious of Angel, which is the creature that turns into like a 2/4 Zulaport Cutthroat on the back. Like, that would be really cool and limited. So she's definitely a card that I'm considering for the cube and a card that I would love to first pick in a draft.
I had to Google who Marceline the Vampire Queen was. I didn't know who that was.
What? You don't watch Adventure Time?
Here's the thing. I watch Adventure Time, but I only watch it for the Lumpy Space Princess. So I specifically look at the episode she's in, and I don't really look at anything else. But I may have to change that.
Yeah. It's so fun. Adventure Time is awesome.
Yes. I'm surprised you weren't excited about Docent of Perfection, because you love some human
that's
wizards.
Me. Yes.
Oh,
yes,
Well, Katie, kick us off then.
Okay. I was looking through all the spoilers, and I read it, and I was like, wizards, that must be right up Hallie's, like, driveway.
Yeah, he does make a lot of human wizards.
So he's 3 blue-blue for a flying 5/4. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you get to put a 1/1 blue human wizard token onto the battlefield. If you control 3 or more, you get to transform him, and he transforms into a 6/5 flyer. And when you cast an instant or sorcery, you get a 1/1 wizard, and all of your wizards get +2/+1. So you just make a little army of tiny wizards that grow into big wizards and then hit people a lot.
How great is the callback art? Because if you look at Delver of Secrets, like the original Delver of Secrets, the man is studying and the bug's in the cage. And when you look at Docent, it's flipped. The bug is doing the studying and the man's in the cage.
That's awesome.
I feel bad for the man.
You're keeping the man down.
But look how happy that bug is.
That's true.
He's like, I'm just experimenting. Don't worry about me, guys. Yeah, I really like that card.
Was there anything else you're excited about?
I was also excited about Collective Brutality.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one in a black for a sorcery, and I really like the escalate that they've come up with, where you get to pay a cost for each mode chosen beyond the first. So this one has escalate for discarding a card, and you can choose one or more. Target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose an instant or sorcery from it. They discard that. Target opponent or target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn, or target opponent loses 2 and you gain 2. I'm pretty excited about the possibilities with this card, because if you draw it late in the game, you can discard a land, or if you're doing, you know, madness or something, I think it'll just have a lot of good synergies, and I think it'll be a very popular card in Constructed.
Yeah, I was excited when that card first came out. It was like a hug from Jesus. Like, I first saw this, and I didn't know that Escalate could only be used, like, each mode could only be used once. So when I first saw that card, I was like, oh, I was like, I can play Ad Nauseam and draw my whole deck and then discard my whole deck. And then people on Twitter were like, wait a minute, girl, you could only use each mode once. And I was like, oh. And then, but even then, being able to just discard cards, I like discarding cards, especially if they have Dredge on them. And so I was very excited by that card. And I was just, yes.
Yeah.
I had a few cards that I was pretty interested in. And one of them, if not maybe two of them, were spoiled today. I, for one, am excited about Incendiary Flow, because I feel like Red needed this, because, yes, they were overly powerful before. White kind of, you know, has gotten, like, a kick in the ass, and I feel like, you know, Red needs that now, too. And Incendiary Flow is a colorless and a red sorcery, and it deals 3 damage to target creature or player. If a creature dealt damage this way, would die this turn, exile it instead. And so I think that's pretty cool. I'm totally down with that. I also am all about Nephalia Academy.
Yeah.
And it's a land. If a spell or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard a card, you may reveal that card and put it on top of your library instead of putting it anywhere else. And, of course, you can tap it to make a colorless. I'm really all about that, because even though they still have... why is my brain exploding right now? I thought it would be good Jund tech, because even though they have... Why can't Fulminator Mage? You know, I still think that's pretty awesome, because it's like, oh, you want me to discard this? Probably not. That's not going to happen. And so I was all about that. I think Providence, that white card that costs like a bajillion and gains you like 26 life. I think it's cool, because it was like, you know, essentially like a faux, pseudo, whatever, leyline effect if you have it in your opening hand. And I think that could be a good sideboard card for people if they want to try to force, like, blue-white control, or just, like, you know, white control deck or something. And then Summary Dismissal, I am all about, because it deals with uncounterable spells and Eldrazi shenanigans, and I am fine with that. And for those who don't know, Summary Dismissal is 2 blue, 2 colorless. It's an instant. Exile all other spells and counter all abilities. I'm fine with this. This is completely fine. And then the last two cards that I was pretty excited about were Curious Homunculus. Just looks kind of cute, and I would definitely want to put him in a blue deck. And it's a colorless and a blue. And if you tap him, you can add a colorless to your mana pool. Spend this mana only to cast an instant or sorcery spell. At the beginning of your upkeep, if there are 3 more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, you transform him. Goes from being a 1/1 to a 3/4 with prowess. Hey! And instant and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And I just think that's really cute. So I'm totally for it. And the last card that I really was about was... United Resistance. I think that these cards that have Escalate are going to be pretty awesome. I'm now curious to see what the blue one is going to end up being. But United Resistance is a colorless and two red. And Escalate is pay a colorless for each mode chosen beyond the first. And you can choose one or both. Target player discards all cards in his or her hand, then draws that many cards. United Resistance deals 4 damage to target creature, or United Resistance deals 3 damage to target opponent. And all of those I am totally about. So there are a couple things I'm excited for, and they weren't all blue cards, so go team me.
Yay! You're showing what the kids call growth.
I'm out of my blue shell.
Me, on the other hand, has not shown any growth. So the cards that I'm really excited about was a Tree of Perdition, which was our spoiler card for Magic Mike's. And, you know, seeing people come up with these Tree Skedekophobia decks where you play Triskaidekaphobia and that, and you just tap it and you're like, I win. Like, that's my idea of a good time. So if anybody makes that combo deck happen, I'm all ears. I was also really excited about Worf Infiltrator. That is the one in a blue, and it has Skulk, and it's a 1/1, so it's probably always going to get through. And when it deals combat damage, you can draw a card, and then if you do, you discard a card. And whenever you discard a creature card, you can pay 2 colorless and get a 3/2 Eldrazi. And I thought this might feed really well into the zombies archetype, because it seems like they're kind of steering zombies into like a self-mill direction, which I'm all about. And so if you discard just zombies to this thing, you put a zombie in the yard, you can maybe make an Eldrazi while you're at it, and that's just value right there. The card that I was really, really excited about and I was so happy to see was Geesa and Giralf. And I love Geesa and Giralf as characters. Like, the story that Allison Lures did was hysterical. And so seeing that they got their own card was stellar. Somebody did a really neat Photoshop job of me and Ruben Bressler and made Ruben Giralf and me Geesa, and it worked out perfectly. So if anybody's interested, I'll just send you that one. But Geesa and Giralf, I really think, even if they can't make zombies happen in Standard, I think they make great commanders. They're 2, a blue and a black. When they enter the battlefield, you put the top 4 cards of your library into the graveyard, and then during each of your turns, you can cast zombies from the graveyard. So you play things like Screeching Scab. You know, you play things like there's a common zombie going around that also self-mills you. You can do things with the Worf Infiltrator. I believe even Liliana lets you kind of mill a little bit. And so if you can do all these things, you might be able to feed your yard, you know, play something like Undead Servant, and then trigger Prized Amalgam, and then get a zombie token while you're at it. And that is the life that I want to be living. So I'm still hoping that zombies can be a thing in Standard. I'm especially hoping that Geesa and Giralf can be a big part of that. And then also the Geyer Reach Sanitarium was cool. It looks really unassuming. It's just add a colorless to your mana pool, and then you can pay 2 and tap it, and each player draws and discards a card. So it's a really great madness enabler. I like drawing and discarding, so I think that card will definitely find a home, and that's kind of what I'm impressed with right now. Our listener question this week, be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This question is from Bjorn, and Bjorn says, Dear Girlfriend Bracket, thank you for keeping the podcast entertaining and for enjoyable footage from the Community Super League. Now, I'll preface my question by saying I know pickup lines to work only when presented in an obviously joking manner, but they sure can make for social sparks from awkward to hilarious. Have any of you received or even given a Magic-inspired pickup line? If not, and say you were single, can you think of any that would catch your eye? Also, what would be your best idea for a Magic-inspired date or a romantic gesture? Hopefully this makes for fun discussion. All the best, Bjorn.
Oh, man. I had a good chuckle over this one. So I've never received a Magic pickup line before. I have had, you know, people ask me out at Magic tournaments, or I've met people through playing Magic, which has been cool. I've never received a Magic related pickup line, but I have received a Pokemon related pickup line. So I thought I would mention that here.
Yes.
And I was actually at a Magic tournament when it happened. It was between rounds of a Legacy tournament, and I was talking to this guy, and he took out a Pokemon card and he shows it to me. And the Pokemon is called Lillipup. It's like a little puppy. It kind of looks like Watson, kind of. Yeah, he's kind of a bushy beard. but he has an ability called Pickup. And Pickup is an ability that I know in the context of the video game, it means that if your Pokemon is fighting another Pokemon, it can like steal their item from them. I don't know what it means in the context of the card game. But in any event, he shows me this card and he points to the Pickup ability and he says, "Will this work on you?" And I said, I have a boyfriend, I'm sorry. But we went on to become good friends, so it all kind of worked out, and now I have this funny story to tell people, so I guess it worked out in a lot of ways. But yeah, I've never received any kind of a magic related pickup line, and I'm not sure how I would react to one. I guess I would have to hear one in order to kind of ascertain if I thought it would be a good one. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. I have, I'm trying to think of like even good ideas for like magic inspired dates. Like I obviously I'm dating someone that I met through playing Magic, and we have like Magic is like a big part of our relationship, obviously, but we I don't know, our relationship is still so much more than that. I guess one of the nicest gestures that my boyfriend did for me early on was that he would start trading for cards for me, I guess. Like, he traded a bunch of cards to get, like, a Voice of Resurgence when we first started dating. And I was like, oh, cool, you got a Voice of Resurgence. And he was like, yeah, I got it for you. And I was like, wait, aww, really? Like, you traded all those cards for something for me? And he was like, yeah, you know, I thought you would want it for your standard deck. And so then we ended up, like, trading for cards for each other a lot after that. So, and ostensibly combining our collections. So that was, I guess, a nice gesture. I don't know of, like, a magic date idea, but I don't know. Maybe you guys have some ideas.
I have never received an MTG pickup line, I don't believe. I haven't given any. I'm sure I could if I really wanted to. There may have been MTG-related sassy jokes made in my direction, perhaps, and I've just forgotten because my boyfriend makes very terrible puns, and so it's quite possible that those things have happened. In relation to MTG-inspired dates, romantic gestures, etc., right now, my boyfriend plays standard, and so he usually ends up winning, and he just kind of accumulates his store credit, and usually if there's cards I really need, he will turn in his store credit for me to get cards instead of himself, which is pretty awesome, and that's very sweet of him to do. And then I think it was last year for Valentine's Day, or the Valentine's Day before, I can't remember, they all blur together, sometimes it feels like, I got Cryptic Commands for Valentine's Day, and that was pretty awesome. So I like receiving magic cards, especially, like, unexpectedly. I'm also really into the magic-related proposals. Not that, like, I ever want to get married, but I like watching other people get engaged. And some of the magic engagements that I've seen, like, whether they're YouTube videos or, you know, people are like, oh, my girlfriend baby this thing and proposed to me, and I put it on Reddit. And I think those are really cute. And so I appreciate people that put in a lot of time and creativity into creating things for their significant others to show them how much they care, and especially using a game that they both really enjoy. So I think that that's awesome. If something like that were to happen, not that I'm dropping any hints for any creative presence or anything, but I wouldn't say no to that, at least. But yeah, I think they're cool.
So you're basically saying that he can forego the ring and just give you a tabernacle, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So it's funny you mentioned this. I was actually having a conversation today with a young man who will remain nameless. And we were, anytime I've ever used magic in like a romantic or flirty capacity, it's so not serious. Like, you're doing it just in jest. You know it's not going to go anywhere. And so I was talking to this guy who I think is cute today. And he was like, he said, ponder and brainstorm are like foreplay. The rituals are sex. And I love tendriling all over the place. And I was like, and I said, well, sex is like dredge. I was like, I like to bring the person back again and again until I decide that I'm done with you. And so that was just sort of describing our lovemaking styles as if we were decks. And I thought that was really cute and kind of fun. I had, sometimes I like to, a metaphor I like to use because I enjoy, you know, a curvier gentleman. And so, you know, whenever I see a guy kind of get down on himself, I like to say, well, some of us like a couple extra cards in the main deck. And so it's usually just in jest and, you know, whatever. And, you know, it's never been, I know one of my friends was comparing gentlemen to different kinds of decks, like saying, you know, like, I guess, you know, you, you know, there's limited decks, which are only 40 cards, and then there's constructed, which are 60, and then EDH is 100, and some people like an EDH deck. It's totally fine. So it's always been in, like, just, you know, ingest kind of things. I had one guy use a terrible pickup line on me once. I was at a PTQ, and he goes to sit down, and he sees his name on the slip, and he goes, "Oh, they got my name wrong." And I was like, "Oh," I was like, you should totally go fix that. That's terrible. And he goes, "Jack Faden, Thief of the Multiverse."
No.
And he puts out his hand, and I was just like, "This is happening." Like, and it was just so bad. Like, what was I supposed to do? Like, Jack Faden? Was I supposed to swoon? Like, was this, was it like you know, Prince Ali? Like, where all the ladies just swing on the balcony when he comes by? Like, what are we doing here? So I've never had it be successfully used against me. I've had conversations that are just purely goofy, and you know, nothing's going to come of it, and you don't think it's going to get you anywhere. But in terms of romantic things, you know, I have to kind of say I'm actually a closet romantic. I don't normally admit this, but you know, I would have fun just sorting cards with the guy, like, just, you know, going through our card collections, talking about things that we like. I know my local game store always does a two-headed giant on Valentine's Day, and I would love to do that with a guy, you know, because obviously you have to do two-headed giant well together if you're ever gonna have a future. And so I would love to do that with somebody. Maybe we go out for a nice dinner afterwards, kind of celebrate our victory. You know, that'd be something I'd be into. Like, I can honestly find anything fun if it's with the right person. So, you know, maybe two-headed giant would be fun, organizing our cards, you know, deck building, play testing, I think, could be romantic in a way. I would just be happy, you know, I've been single for so long, I would just honestly be happy to have a guy to do those things with, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit of feels there, you know. So is there anything else on your minds before we wrap up the show?
On a non-magic related note, I got a DX Racer gaming chair this week.
What is that?
They're pretty fancy and a little expensive, but they're these gaming chairs that apparently a lot of streamers have because they're very comfortable. They're made to sit in for very long periods of time, whether you're playing video games or playing video games or, you know, playing video games. So I got one, and it is like a cloud on my butt. It's great.
Does it cradle your butt in all the right places?
So are you saying is it a cush for the tush?
Oh, it's a cush for the tush.
It's a cush for the tush. Okay. But you don't have to push on the cush. It's just on the tush.
It's just on the tush, and there's no push on the cush, but there's a little bit of push on the back.
Good lumbar support.
Yeah, that's good.
If anybody's thinking about getting one, I highly recommend them. Because I've read a lot of reviews online that are like, these are awesome. But until you really sit in one, I don't think you get it. But they really are awesome. So I'm hoping to stream more, maybe starting this week.
Yes.
So I was like, well, maybe I should get... I was sitting on, like, a folding chair, so I should probably get a real office chair.
Yeah. I remember the first time we got new office chairs at work, I was like, I feel like Lakitu from Super Mario. I'm just floating on a cloud throwing eggs at people. Like, this is great. And so my big announcement is I am seriously considering going to GP Dallas in November.
Yay.
It's a toss-up between Eternal Weekend and Dallas. I don't feel worthy to go to Eternal Weekend. Like, people have offered me cards. Like, I've had people offer to loan me vintage decks, but, like, I am not worthy. Like, these are the biggest dicks in the room, in a good way, and I'm just not... I barely understand Legacy Dredge. Like, I cannot hang with some of these people in their $5,000 decks or $10,000. These are big rollers, and, you know, here I come in, I might as well just be twirling my hair and chewing gum. Like, I would just feel like a complete idiot. And so I feel very inadequate to go to this thing. And so I think I might just go to GP Dallas. Our friend Integral from Twitter is there. He offered me and us a place to crash. I think Chris and I mentioned possibly going, and he's like, yeah, if any of the girls want to come, you can come stay with me. Amy's going with David, and I was like, Amy. And so it's in November, so Dallas in November would be fun. And so it's also looking to be a bit more affordable than Eternal Weekend, because I hate paying for hotels, and, you know, having a place to stay increases the chance that I'll go to an event. So I'm like 50% sure that I'm going to go to Dallas in November. So cool. If anybody wants to join me, we can probably find a place to crash, and it's Dallas, it's modern, and I think it's going to be Indianapolis in August, and I think Dallas will be my next GP. So if anybody wants to come to Dallas, I'd love to hang out with you, and it would be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I already quest off last year. I was like, I'm ready to go.
You're going?
Oh, yeah.
No, you're not.
Yep. Like, my the two, well, actually, no, the three big GPs I meant to go to this year were either, it was going to be down between Charlotte and LA, so if someone to LA, Indianapolis, and then I was like, I want to go to Dallas. I haven't been to Texas in, like, a millennia, so I was like, I feel like I should do that. And plus, it's modern, so everybody wins.
Okay, if it's you and Amy, I'm going to Dallas. That's, you'll have to let me know what flight you're going on so we can fly together again.
I know, it's always more fun. And last time I got plain cookies, and they were awesome.
What?
And I was sad that you had to miss them.
Ugh, all I got was nuts. And snacks.
Yeah.
God. All right, so if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. I'm also reluctantly on Snapchat at HalCanSan. I haven't posted anything yet, but maybe if you send me stuff, I'll send you back stuff. I don't know. I'm also in the process of moving right now, but once I am moved into my new space, I will probably be streaming again at twitch.tv/HalCanSan. So check my Twitter, and I will post updates about that.
And I am Katie. You can find me on at, oh God, I've already jumbled everything. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MeanMugger. Or later this week on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG.
And I'm Chris. You can find me on Twitter at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. And my new blog that I have not quite updated yet because new ideas have not come to me is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com.
Hallie, I sent you something just now.
You sent me hand sanitizer.
You didn't say what it had to be. You said send me something. So I had hand sanitizer, and I was like, there we go. I've sent you something.
Oh, God.
Maybe your hands are a little dirty. I'm giving you some sanitization from Milwaukee.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Asterisk. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me at OriginalAsterisk@gmail.com. You can find me on Snapchat at OriginalAsterisk. We are on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com, patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. Our t-shirts are here and they are fabulous. And we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.